Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Kuf Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah is familiar to us from the Gemara in Baba Kama, where we discussed it pretty extensively. Here the Mishnah begins, a machlif para bichamor. Someone who exchanges a para with a chamor, ve'yalda, and the para gave birth. V'chein, in a similar situation, a mocher shifchato, someone who sells his shifcha, ve'yalda, and she gives birth. Ze'omer ad shelo mecharti. Each one of them makes a claim that it belongs to them, the baby that was born, whether to the cow, the calf that is born, or to the shifcha, the baby that is born. One says that it took place before I sold it, and therefore it belongs to me, the seller. On the other hand, the buyer says it happened after I bought it, and therefore it belongs to me. Yachloku, they split it. So, as Rashi notes over here, the structure of the cases is made so that you could have a possibility of them not knowing the information. The first of which is a machlif para bichamor. The kinyan here is a kinyan chalipin, which is that in exchange for one item, I get another item. It's a barter transaction. And therefore, by making a kinyan on the chamor, I'm able to acquire the para, even though the para is not here right now. For that reason, it's a possibility that you will have no idea when the para gave birth, whether it was prior to the transaction or after the transaction, because the para wasn't present at the time that the kinyan took place that finalized the transaction. I made a kinyan on the chamor. Automatically, because of chalipin, the para comes into the possession of the other party. But the para wasn't there, so they don't know at what point that happened. Did it give birth before that point or after that point? And each one is arguing that it happened in their possession. And similar by the shivcha, a shivcha has a din like karka, and therefore she can be acquired through kesef. So there's a possibility that the kinyan kesef took place without the shivcha being present. And so once again, there's a possibility that the information is not known because she wasn't present at the time of the transaction. That's the way that Rashi explains it, that the case is particular, that the machlif para v'chamor is a kinyan chalipin, and the kinyan for the shivcha is a kinyan kesef because it facilitates the ability to be a lack of knowledge about what happened here because they can be done at an arm's length and then you wouldn't see the outcome of the birth even though you're making an acquisition or doing the kinyan here. Others suggest that that isn't the case, but rather the reason for it is to avoid problems of ona'a, which is that in cases of kinyan chalipin, where it's a barter transaction, or in cases of karka, there may not be any din of ona'a. And so both of these transactions avoid problems of ona'a, of overcharging or mispricing, and therefore that's why they're structured this way, not because of the practical situation as to that them not being aware of what was happening, because you could create other scenarios like that. The Mishnah says, when they both make a tanat bari, yachloku. Hayulo bet avadim. He has two slaves. Echad gadol ve'echad katan. One of them is big, one of them is small. Whether that means in physical size or age, it's not clear. V'chein bet sadot, or two fields, echad gadola ve'echad katana, one that is larger, one that is smaller. Halokeach omer, the buyer says, gadol lakachti. I bought the larger one. Meaning that they transact for an eved, or they transact for a sadeh, without clarifying exactly which sadeh, which eved it is. The buyer says that our transaction was for the larger one, vahala omer, ini yodea. The seller says, I don't know. Zachabi gadol, bari v'shema, bari odif, similar to the previous Mishnah, so therefore we're going to say over here that he gets the larger one. Hamocher omer katan macharti, the seller says, I sold the smaller one, vahala omer, ini yodea. And the other party, the buyer, says that I don't know. Eino ela katan. Then he gets the smaller one because, again, you have a bari and shema, bari odif. We'll have to explain this then according to Rav Nachman, because Rav Nachman will be faced with the fact that when you have bari and shema, that's not sufficient grounds for determining who gets it. So the same question that the Gemara had on the previous Mishnah with regards to Rav Nachman's shita would also be applicable over here. And then you would have to come up with ways or situations to create what's called esek shvua b'nehem. Ze omer gadol, v'ze omer katan. One of them says it was a gadol, one of them says it was a katan. This is a bari and bari claim. Yishava mocher shakatan machar. if they both make definitive claims, this one saying that it was the small one that was sold, and this one the big one, then Ishava Mocher, the seller has to take a Shfuah Shekatan Machar, that the smaller one was sold. The Gemara will discuss why it is the obligation of the Shfuah is on the Mocher, but the Shfuah here seemingly derives from the fact that you have a Modeh B'Miksat over here. This is similar to the previous case where Zeh Omer She'ula, V'Zeh Omer Schura, in the previous Mishnah where the renter says that it was during the time of the rental, and the lender says it was during the time of the lending, not the rental. And there we said, Yishava HaSocher, that the party who has it has to take a Shavuah. The Gemara there asked, Mativ HaShavuah Zot. Why are they taking this Shavuah? Because it's a Bari and Bari claim. What is generating the Shavuah? The Gemara answered in the previous Gemara that it was a Gilgul Shavuah, that there was Shavuat HaShomrim that he was Chayav to take. And because of Shavuat HaShomrim, therefore we were megalgel on him that he has to tell us whether it died a natural death or didn't die a natural death. Over here, obviously, that's not relevant, because the previous Mishnah, we had Shavuat HaShomrim, which allowed you then to pile on or to do a Gilgul Shavuah. Over here, it's not a Shomer. Here we have a buyer and a seller, and so therefore the Shavuah that's demanded here is because there is a Modeh B'Miksat, that there's a Gadol and a Katan, and that Modeh B'Miksat is what is driving the Shavuah in this instance. They both say, we don't know, Yachloku. Then they split it. And so Gemara says, Amai Yachloku. Why do they split it over here? V'lechzei b'shut man kaima. Let us look at the standing of the animal, the Shivcha, as to whose possession she is found in, or the cow is found in, and that will be a form of chazakah, meaning that where the item is found generates a chazakah. So why don't we look now and say, why should they split it? Let's look at whose possession the animal is in, or the Shivcha is in. And the other party will be a motzi mechavero alav araya. What are the grounds for saying yachloku over here? If it's found in one of their two possessions. If it's found in whoever's possession is found, that should be determinant. And then the other party wants to change that possession should have to bring a raya. So Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Avin Amar Shmuel bo medet be'agam. It's a case where it's out in the agam. It's in a place that has no ownership. It's hefker, or it's a public venue. And therefore you don't have ownership of one over the other. So since it's a grazing out in the pastures, there's no way to determine, based on its location, as to whom it belongs to. Therefore, Yachloku. The Bali Tosafot ask over here, it's a fundamental question with regards to this, which is, Vim Tomar. V'chinami avi vlad b'shut lokeach, ein zeh hochecha dekana. Just because the baby is found in the possession of the buyer, that's not an indication of the fact that he owns it. Da'amrin and b'cheskat abatim ha-godrot, ein lehem chazakah. Items that move don't have a din of chazakah. Mishum deshema me'elem ba'ulir shuto. Because if you have animals that wander, how can you say the fact that they're found here is determinant in who owns them? Because they could have wandered off into that location and wandered to the other person's possession. O tafsam berechov. Or they were walking through the street and he grabbed them and took them home with him. Shein hochot lirot. So possession over here should not be a determining factor. And therefore, Balei Tosafot are perplexed by the Gemara's question as to why they're asking about location. Location should be irrelevant over here because you have items that are mobile. Items that are mobile move on their own or can be moved on their own shouldn't be a din in chazakah because if, for instance, here by the Shivcha, she could have taken the baby with her to the possession of the lokeach because she knew that that's where she was going or she didn't want to be separated from her baby. So there's no indication the fact that the baby's in the possession of the lokeach doesn't mean it was born in the possession of the lokeach. So Tosfot says, V'yesh lamar, Kevan de'ika drurra de mamona. So this is Tosfot, Tosfot back on Da Bet Amud Bet, who describes over there, drurra de mamona means the safek exists independent of the claims of the parties. So here, the claims of the parties is not what generates the safek. Even if the parties had no claim, we'd still have the same safek, which is, we have no idea when this baby was born relative to the time of the transaction. So he says, since here we have a drudder mona, v'yesh safek b'davar b'lo tanutehem, which is Tosafot l'shitato. Rashi over there says that it's chisaron kis, This is the Shita of the Balei Tosafot. V'toein bari alokeach, and the lokeach has a tanat bari. He's making a definitive claim. Im hu b'shuto, ein lo tzi miyado. If it's in his possession, we're not going to take it out of his possession. Aval maya toein shema. If he only said shema, svaruhu shlo toil hez chato. So Tosafot over here says that you need additional items in order to solidify the fact that it's in your possession. So just being in your possession now would not have been sufficient. That's based on the Gemara in Cheskat HaBatim, that these items that are mobile and move around, that's not sufficient grounds or reason for determining who owns it. But if you add together with that other items, number one is the Safek exists independent of his claim, number one. Number two is he is making a definitive claim that it happened in his property or it is his. So if you combine those factors, those would give you an indication as to whose chazak or whose possession they are in. And so Tosafot says that this isn't your normal scenario or normal case, and therefore that's why the Gemara thinks that the location has meaning. But he says, aval, mocher, imhu mukzak. On the other hand, if the mocher is in possession of it, mo'il, afilu hu toein shema. Even if he says maybe, it helps. Because he had possession of the item prior to this. So he definitively had ownership over this animal because he's the prior owner. And so his chazakah exists because he already owned it and it's found in his possession. You combine those two things together, that gives more strength to the location of the animal. And even if he's only saying maybe it happened, that he doesn't have to give a definitive claim because he has this additional chazakah that backs his position as far as the location is concerned. So Tosafot, first of all, separates between the lokeach and the mocher. In both instances, he says location by itself is not sufficient. I need something else to bolster your claim that it is in your possession. For the mocher, that's natural. Because it was his before then. It was his while it was pregnant. So if you just keep the chazakah that where it was, it stayed, that would go in his favor. And so therefore, if it's in his property, that would have meaning. For the lokeach, that's not true, because now we have a transfer of ownership. So the lokeach will need additional items to help him or bolster the fact that in his possession, there's meaning to that. One of those is Gerard de Mamona. The safek exists independent of his claim. He is not generating the safek. The safek is there irrespective of his claim. And number two is, he makes a vadai claim. He's making a definitive claim. A shema claim here would not be sufficient because it belonged to the prior owner before this. We're transferring ownership over here. So unless he makes a definitive claim, we will not use that to bolster the fact that it's found in his possession. But you see here, the Balei Tosafot are explaining to us that just location by itself would not have been sufficient here. You need additional items to give a heft to the claim of location, because otherwise location by itself is not sufficient because these are items that wander, that are mobile, and therefore location should not be determinant. The Ritva, on the other hand, says that that's only when there's a question about the kinyan that was made on the item. Do you have a right to the item or don't have a right to the item? On the other hand, here, it's clear that both parties agree there was a kinyan, and therefore, location might have impact because they both agree to the fact that the kinyan took place. This is not a question of whether there is any ownership or right to ownership at all, but rather, when did that transition of ownership take place? And so since both agree to it, then location carries more weight. And that's how the Ritva answers the question that's posed by the Tosafot, that mobile items or things that move around don't usually have a chazakah based on their location. And then Tosafot says, Ulufi mashi perashti. Now, based on what I explained, shechezkat alokeach mo'elet kishetoin bari, that the chazak alokeach works when he is toin bari, ati shapir de mishani de kaima ba'agam. That's the reason the Gemara said it's in the agam, velo mishani de kaima bishut lokeach, and doesn't say that it is in the possession of the lokeach. You could have argued that being in the possession of the lokeach would have meant nothing, because being in the possession of the lokeach would not have indicated anything, and therefore, we could have just said it was in the possession of the lokeach. Gemara doesn't give that because Tosafot says it does have meaning when it's in the possession of the lokeach if I add other factors to that, including Drarud de Mamona and the Bari claim. The Tosafot says the truth is that it could have also said that it was found in the Reshut HaRabim. In the Agam and the Rishut Rabim are the same thing because they both are independent areas where neither one of them has a claim. But generally, a behema and a shifcha don't hang out in the Rishut Rabim. They're more likely to hang out in the Agam or places that are quiet or green pastures, not hanging out in a busy Rishut Rabim. So that's why Tosafot explains for us this idea of possession being a chazokah that you would have to then be motzi mechavero lavaraya. Shifcha nami, for the shifcha also, dekaimo besimto, that she is on a side road. So the agam is not a likely place you're going to find a shifcha, especially since she just gave birth, but rather in a simta. Simta is a side road, something that is a road between the chatzer and the Rishut Rabim. It's an area, again, where nobody has ownership over it, but it's a quieter area where you can make kinyanim. If you need a kinyan mishicha, here we're using kinyan kesef, so it doesn't matter. But it's an area where she could be found, which is quiet, but yet not either of their possessions. Mar says, v'nukma achezka demarakamo. So now we have another chazaka, which is the original owner. V'laviidach hamotzi michaveiro alav araya. And the other party should now be a claimant that is trying to remove it from his possession. So, if that is the situation, Cheskat Marakamo, which is the original state or the original status, also has a chazaka. We have that by people, by tum'ah. For instance, a person is Becheskat Tara. So then the person has a chazaka of being tahor. And since he has a chazaka of being tahor, if he comes into Safek tum'ah, we have to grapple with the fact that he has a chazaka of being tahor prior to this point in time. Is the Safek strong enough to overcome that chazaka? Or the other way around, if he has a cheskat tumah, he was already tameh, then when we want to change the status, that requires additional proof. The same thing here. The ownership was in the hands of the seller. You want to change that default, you have to actually bring proof to the fact that it has left the chazakah of that individual. So again here, you should have a burden of proof that is on the buyer to show that it's left the possession of the seller. Gemara answers, Hamani Sumchusi. This Mishnah is authored by Sumchus, or the Mishnah itself follows the position of Sumchus. Damar Mamona Mutava Safek Chokim Belo Shvua. That money that is in doubt, we split it without a Shvua. So that's our Mishnah now. Why it says Yachloku is because he does not subscribe to the principle of the Chachamim, Amotzi Michaveiro Olav Araya. Rather, where there is a Safek, Sumcho says, yachloku, that you do split it. Gemara says, imor da'amar sumchus b'shema v'shema. This goes back to, again, to Daf Bet, Amud Bet in Bava Metzia, a little chazara for us, from the beginning of the Masechta. The Gemara said there, that maybe sumchus would only says this b'shema v'shema, when both are making an unclear claim. They don't have a definitive claim on their side. B'bari u'bari mi'amar. Since when did he say both parties have a definitive claim that they split it? It's one thing if their safek is there, plus each party says, I don't know. So they both don't know. The item is besafek, so we say yachloku. But if they both make definitive claims, who says that sumchus agrees in that case to say that they should split it? Because over here, both of them are making definitive claims. Who says that sumchus would say yachloku? So like we saw back on Daf Bet Amud Bet, Amar Rabba Bar Huna in Amar Sumchus Afilu Bibari Ubari, that even in definitive claims, Sumchus says Yachloku. So it's not just when there's sufficient safek here do we say Yachloku. You could have argued that Sumchus's position derives from the unknown information, which is that the less we know, the higher the level of the safek, the more chance you would split it. So in a case where they're both making Shema claims, there's a much higher level of Safek, and that's where he says you split it. They both are making definitive claims. Maybe over there the Safek is not high enough in order to make it a Yachloku, because they are both making mutually exclusive claims of Bari. Along comes Rabbi Bar Rav Huna and says, no, that Sumchus's principle exists even in a Safek where both parties are making mutually exclusive claims, and that still is a sufficient grounds of Safek for us to say Yachloku, that they will split it. So that is the position of Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Rava Amar, Rava disagrees and says, Olam ki amar sumchus shema v'shema. Aval bari v'bari lo amar. So Rava says that, I don't think that's correct. I think that sumchus's din is only applicable, by Shema B'Shema. It is not applicable by Bari Bari, but now he has a problem with our Mishnah. Why in our Mishnah, in the first cases of our Mishnah, where it's Yachloku, and they're both making Bari Bari claims, who is the author of such a position, or whose position are we following, that the Mishnah says that? V'tnei, he amends the Mishnah to say, Zeomer Shema Ad Shelo Macharti, V'Zeomer Shema Mishalakachti. So if this is a very big emendation of the Mishnah, instead of saying, I bought it, or it happened after I bought it, or it happened before I sold it, he's saying, Shema, maybe it happened before I sold it. Or maybe it happened after I bought it. So he's making it into a Shema v'Shema kedes. Tanan, our Mishnah continues and says, Ze omer eni yodea, v'ze omer eni yodea, yachloku. So the latter part of our Mishnah says if they both say I don't know, then they split it. Bishlam ala Rava. For Rava, that makes sense. Midaseifa Shema v'Shema. Since the Seifa is a case of Shema v'Shema, and there the Psak is Yachloku, Reishanami, the Reishanami, the beginning of our Mishnah, is also a case of Shema v'Shema. Elo Rava v'Ravuna, Damar in, Amar Sumchos afilu bebari bari, who thinks that Sumchos has his position even when there are definitive claims on both sides, Hashta, Bari u'Bari, Amar Yachloku. Then already in the beginning of the Mishnah, you said that when they have definitive claims, Yachloku, Shema v'Shema mibayi. You need to tell me in the latter half of the Mishnah, when they don't have definitive claims, when they have maybe claims, that Yachloku, where it says, Imishum ha, lo yiriya. If that's your question, if that's your problem, that does not upend the position of Rabba Barav Huna. Tana Seifa, le gluye resha. The Seifa is not there to bring you the additional din, but rather to shed light on the resha. In the Seifa, it's taking you about a case of Shema and Shema to indicate to you, Shalotamai, Resha, Shema, Veshema. Don't say that the Resha case is also similar to Shema, Shema, about Bari, Bari, Lo. But Bari and Bari, that's not the case. Tana Seifa, Shema, Veshema. It wrote in the latter half of the Mishnah, a case of Shema, Shema, Michlau, for you to infer, to indicate that the Resha, Bari, Bari. That the case in the Resha is a different case of Bari, Bari. Fafilu Hachi, Yachloku. And despite that fact, you have to split it. So here you have the Achmachloket in the Gemara as to how far Sumchus's position goes. Rabba bar Rav Huna, here back on Daf Beit Amud Bet as well, states that Sumchus's position applies even by Bari or Bari. Even when both people have definitive claims, Sumchus still says Yachloku. Rava says that Sumchus's position is only valid when there's a Shema and Shema claim, when there's a, I don't know, claims on both sides, or maybe claims on both sides. They have definitive claims on both sides. Sumchus then defaults to the position of the Chachamim, which is a motzi mechavero, alav haraya. Our Mishnah presents a problem, and that's why Rava amended the Mishnah to read as if it was a case of Shema and Shema in the Reisha. And he reads the Mishnah as being, since the Seifa Shema Shema, so is the Reisha a case of Shema and Shema. And Rabbi Rav Huna reads it, no, the Seifa Shema Shema to tell you that the Reisha is different, that it's a case of Bari and Bari, and that's why Yachloku. Tnan, our Mishnah again. Ze omer gadol, ze omer katan. So in our Mishnah, it says that if one makes a claim that it was a gadol and the other one a katan, yishava mocher shekatan machar. So again, here it says that you have to take a shvua that he was sold the smaller one. Bishlam al Rava, according to Rava, damar ki amar sumchus shema shema. When did sumchus say his din of yachloku? That's in shema v'shema. Aval bari ubari lo amar. By Bari and Bari, he does not say that, meaning that he subscribes to the position of the Chachamim there. Shumhoche yishava. That's why he has to take a shvua. Elo Rabba bar Rav Huna demar in, amar sumchus, afilu Bari Bari. Even in cases of Bari Bari, yachloku, amai yishava mocher. Why should the mocher have to take a shvua? Yachloku mi baile. They should have to split it here. Moda sumchus, hecha deika shvua deoraita. Moda sumchus agrees when there's a shvua deoraita that we turn on the Shvua Doraita. If there's a Torah Shvua that exists over there, then we're going to force him to take the Shvua Doraita. Kidibaina and the Meimer Lekaman, as we are going to explain further on. In the remainder of the Gemara is going to come to this and explain why there has to be a Shvua Doraita over here. Again, at face value, there's no reason for a Shvua Doraita over here. You have two parties making a claim, and the claims seem to be mutually exclusive. And therefore, there should not be a need or necessity for a shvua over here. Yet there is a shvua doraita, and that the Gemara will clarify on the Amud Bet. But based on that, the Gemara says that Sumchus agrees. When there is a shvua doraita, in that situation, then we're going to force the Shvua instead of saying Yechloku. Yechloku is a means for adjudicating or solving a problem. I have a problem. I have an uncertainty which I cannot clarify. There are different mechanisms for clarifying that. One is a Psak Din, which says that I have to make a determination and the court determines which person it belongs to. That's one way to be Machriya. But there are certain circumstances where the court will not be able to be Machriya. For instance, in this case, where the information is just not known, and how are they going to be Machriya? So I have different mechanisms for being Machriya. One of them is Yachloku. One of them is to split it. The other mechanism is Hamotzi Mechabero Alava Raya. Or I have a mechanism of Shvua. Shvua is a mechanism for allowing people to clarify a situation and make a determination. So what Rabbi Bar Mehuna is saying is, Sumchus uses this vehicle of Yachloku as a solution when Shvua is not there. But if there's a Shvua that exists already, then I'm not going to override that determination of Shvua in order to say Yachloku. If I don't have any other option, that's Yachloku. Maybe versus Amotzi Mechaber Ola Baraya, I'll favor Yachloku. But in a situation where I have a Shvua, though, right? A Shvua from the Torah, I'd much rather use that than use Yachloku. And that's what Rabbi Ravuna is saying in the position of Sumchus. So now, the way to read our Mishnah, according to the Gemara, is that the Mishnah is either authored by Sumchus, or the Tan of the Mishnah is following the position of Sumchus, and that's why we say Yachloku in the cases of the Mishnah. Now, what's very interesting here, and it's important, Tosafot says that the Gemara, after asking a number of questions, did not use the word Ella, did not use the word but, or instead of that we will say. We have noted this many times, that in the Gemara, Ella is a key word for saying to us that the Gemara rejected what it said previously, is now introducing a new solution. The Gemara asked a question regarding the location of the animal. Why isn't that a chazakah? And answered, agam. It's in a place or position where it doesn't matter. Then the Gemara says, what about chazakah of the marakama? What about the previous owner's chazakah? The Gemara then jumped and said, oh, sumchus is the position that is governing the Mishnah, and that's why it's yachloku. So the chazakot don't matter. But the Gemara doesn't say, ella, and then introduce the answer that hamani sumchusi. The Gemara doesn't say ella, which leads the Balei HaTosafot to say here, the Rabbeinu Shmuel, the Rashbam, says that the Gemara kept the original solution of agam. And that has major impact on Sumchus's position. And that's what you see in the Tosafot over here. He says, Nira the Rabbeinu Shmuel, B'delo kamar ella, since the Gemara does not introduce the answer of Sumchus with the word ella, ha'mani Sumchusi, mashma delo hadarbe mad'ukma bo'medet ba'agam, that the animal is still standing in the agam, according to this. That narrows the position of sumchus to cases where it's not in the possession of one of the parties. If one of the parties has possession of the item, then he agrees with the chachamim that amotzi mechaveiro alav araya. This is a severe limiting or narrowing of the position of sumchus, that sumchus's position is only true where there's no chezkat of ownership or chezkat location that exists. Had it been in the possession of one of the two parties, he would agree with the chachamim, motzi mechaveiro alav araya. The only reason he says yachloku over here is because it's found in an area that's independent of either party's ownership. And so that's what the Rashbam claims over here. The Kasha the Ri asks a question on that, and then, Ishlamar, hatam sham mukzak nami toin shema, ein chezkato ma'elet. V'hocho ukimna bo meret bagam, de lukma afilu bibari ubari. So Tosfo then jumps and discusses what he discussed before. He finds a case where that's not true. That sumchus seems to indicate, even though it's found in someone's property, that yachloku. So Tosfo then draws on what he said before, which is that possession is only a valid chazakah when you bring with it a bari claim. When you bring with it a definitive claim, again, when items that move or items that are not determined by location, you need to have both a bari claim and the location. If you simply have the location and say Shema, then that chazakah does not carry weight. And since that chazakah doesn't carry weight, even sumchus there will say yachloku. They will split it. All right, so that's one thing. It's a very important point within sumchus. Although, if you could look in the Gra in Ot Gimel, the Gra says, V'nir be'einai alav Rambam mifarish, d'hadar be mishnuya kama. The Rambam, on the other hand, believes that the Gemara rejected the Agam solution, and as if it was written Ella in the Gemara. Vafra bonan lo perish bo medit bagam ubeshema ubeshema. And even the Rabbanan don't explain it, that it was standing in the Agam, but rather as a case of Shema and Shema. So the Rambam in the end does say, not like the Rashbam, that the Gemara rejected the previous solutions, and Sumchus's position of Yachloka would apply even if it was omitted in one of the two parties' properties. So here you have a Machloka Trishonim as to whether Sumchus's din is governed by what the Gemara says here in Agam. And that has a big nafkamina within Sumchus, as to whether Sumchus applies when the animal is found in one of the two parties' possessions. That's the first thing. The second thing that Tosfot notes over here is, why don't we set this up like the Chachamim? Sumchus says Yachloku, because Sumchus doesn't have a Motzi Michavero Lavaraya. On the other hand, the Chachamim who have Motzi Michavero Lavaraya are faced with the problem of the Chezkat Marakama, the original owner's Chazaka. Tosfot says you have a counter to that Chazaka, which is that Lukma afiluk rabbanam rahocha leilan demeza batar marakama dika chazaka acheret kenegda. We have an opposing chazaka to ukma becheskat miuberet v'hashtehi dialda. We have to also keep its current status. Just like ownership, a original status is what it remains, so too by the physical status of the animal, we assume the same. The animal was pregnant. We now know that it gave birth after the fact. But it was pregnant, as far as we know, into the transaction. So just like the previous owner, the seller, has the ownership unless proven otherwise, so too you can assume that the cow was pregnant unless proven otherwise. So now I have two chazakot offsetting each other. I have the chazaka of the previous owner's ownership, but I also have a chazaka that the animal was pregnant and had yet to give birth. One is in favor of the buyer, that chazaka that the animal remained pregnant, and one is in favor of the seller, that he was the previous owner. So now I have offsetting chazakot, and the Rabbanan should agree, Yachloku. He says that these aren't equal chazakot. The chazaka of the previous owner's ownership is stronger. Tosfot says, if you could bolster the chazaka of Muberet with Cheskat Mamon, for instance, that he has the money in his hands, he has yet to pay for it. Over here, it's not possible because he already put the money out for the Shifcha, or he already gave a kinyan on the Chamor. But if he still had possession and he had yet to pay, then those two Chazakot could give you enough strength to go up against the Chazak of Cheskat Marakama. But that's not the case here, and therefore Cheskat Marakama is stronger. So what Tosfot is noting here is that not all Chazakot are created equally. That doesn't, just because you have different chazakot on each side doesn't mean that that means we offset them and everything's done. Because you can have stronger chazakot and weaker chazakot. And the stronger chazakah is going to trump in this case. And for that reason, the Rabbanan cannot be the authors of the Mishnah because Chesed Marakama carries a lot of weight. Since it carries a lot of weight, you're going to say a motzi mechavero alav araya. So the truth is that the Gemara could have asked the question that we ended off with about why is there a shvuah here according to Sumchus in the previous Mishnah, because we had the same problem in the previous Mishnah. So Tosfot says it just waited until now to ask the question. He says, although, according to the Rashbam, it makes a lot of sense, because Sumchus doesn't say Yachloku when there is a Chazakah, plus is Toein Bari. But with just Toein Bari is not sufficient grounds. So if that's the case, then it's understandable why the Gemara waited until now, because it's Kayib Agam. Since it's in the Agam, the Tana Bari and Bari ends up with Yachloku, and why should you take a Shvuah? In the previous case of Zeh Shulav, Zeh Shura, over there, they is in the possession of the Shoel, and therefore he does have a Chazakah on the animal, and since he's Muchzak in the animal, plus he's a Tanat Bari, over there, Simchus would agree that you need a Shvuah, or a Motzi Mechavrei Olav Araya, and therefore, it wouldn't be Yachloku. So the Rashbam, it makes sense why the Gemara waited until now to ask it. But if you don't agree with the Rashbam, the Gemara could have asked it on the previous Mishnah. And the answer is that the Gemara waited until here to ask the question because then it can deal with both of the Mishnayot at the same time. Gemara says, Hayolo bet avadim, echad gadol ve'echad katan. Gemara asks, Amayi shava. Why does he have to take a shvua over here? Seemingly, the shvua is modeh b'miktzat, which is one guy says, give me a big one, and the other one's saying, you only get a small one. So small is part of big. And if that's the case, it is a modeh b'miktzat. So the assumption is that the shvua in the Mishnah is generated because of modeh b'miksat. Mar says, mashita'ano lo hodelo, mashodelo lo ta'ano. What he claimed, he's not admitting to. And what he admitted to is not what the claim is. So that's the first problem, which is that when you're talking about sums of money, you can talk about modeh b'miksat. A smaller sum of money is a subset of a larger set of money. When you're talking about two different avadim, you can't say that the smaller eved is a subset of the bigger eved. Why is that modeh b'miksat? They have nothing to do with each other. That's the first question. Ra'od, the second question is, helachu. It's helach, which is what we discussed earlier in the Masechta, that if you believe helach can overcome the problem of modeh b'miksat, if the seller just simply says, here's the smaller eved, take it, it's yours, then there's no modeh b'miksat anymore, because helach, when you say take it, it's yours, that's not an admission that generates modeh b'miksat. That had to do with the Rabbi Chiya back in the first perek, Rabbi Chiya Kaman, Rabbi Chiya Batra, that the Gemara discussed whether helach is sufficient grounds to unwind a modeh b'miksat back on Daf Dalet. So now the Gemara says you could do the same thing here. If he says helach and he throws him the smaller evidence, says that's yours, there's no modeh b'miksat. So there's no shvuah there. Vod, ein nishbaim al avadim. Third problem is that just like we're not nishba ala karkot, we're not nishba ala vadim and anshtarot. So over here, this is a shivcha. So how are you taking a shvua with regards to the shivcha? Shivcha kananit has the same din as karka, and there's no shvua that is taken. Modeh b'miksat doesn't matter. So Gemara says I have three reasons here why this shvua should not be a shvat modeh b'miksat. So now we have to figure out what's the case in the Mishnah that would generate a shvua modeh b'miksat when they're making definitive claims against each other. So Amarav bito'ano demei. The case is where he's asking him for the money. Demei eved gadol, demei eved katan. The value of a large eved, the value of a small eved. Demei sadeh gdola, demei sadeh ktana. Or the value of a large field, or the value of a smaller field. The way Rashi says, demei eved gadol masarti lecha biyadcha, shitikneuli. Velo kanita betovo adamim. I gave you the money to go out and purchase an eved on my behalf. I gave you money to purchase a large eved. I want the money back because you never purchased it for me. The other guy says, no, you gave me money for a small eved, not for a big eved, and I refund you that money. So he says that the argument is about the value of the money that he gave to him in order to go and purchase something on his behalf, whether it's a field, whether it's an eved. So the machloket is about money. How much money did they give to him? That's the way Rashi explains the case. Tosafot disagrees and says, Perish shekuntris v'kasha. Tolav el minkat v'matnita nokeachu mocher el shliachu mishaleach. The way Rashi is making the case, it's not a buyer and a seller over here. It's a principal and a proxy. He sent him to do something on his behalf, and he failed to do it on his behalf. That's the case according to Rashi. Elanir l'ri, demayri shemachar lo eved, Benatan lo damim. It's a case where he sold him an eved, and he already gave him the money. Velo katav adayin ashtar. And the shtar has yet to be written. Well, why should that matter? Kesef is kone by avadim. The transaction should be done. Ela v'ayri b'makom shekotvim ashtar. It's a place or a location where they write shtarot for these types of transactions, and therefore the transaction is not considered complete until the shtar is written. Inami. Kugon shehitnu diyuchlu lachzor ad nitinat shtar. Or they agreed that they could back out of the transaction until the shtar was given. So over here it's a case where the money is already in the hands of the seller, and now they have to finalize the transaction. And now they're arguing about documenting and putting the transaction together, finalizing the transaction. So he paid the money, and he doesn't have ownership yet over the eved. So now their argument is about the refunding of the money. How much money is he going to get refunded because he's backing out of the transaction? So the buyer says, I gave you money to buy a big eved. Give me back that money. The seller says, no, you gave me money to buy my smaller eved. I'll give you back that money, not the larger money. So there it's a lokeach and a mocher, a question about a buyer and a seller. And the buyer is allowed to renege on the transaction, even though money is koneh by a vadim, is because it's either a location where the minhag is to write a shtar for finality, or in a situation where they agreed that the shtar would be the finality of the transaction. So therefore, he's allowed to back out and get his money refunded. And now they're arguing about the refund or the size of the refund for backing out of the transaction. So that's the way the Balei Tosafot explained the case here, according to Rav. So that's our first answer. Our second answer is, Ushmol Amar, Betoano, ksut eved gadol, ksut eved katan. The clothing of a large eved or the clothing of a smaller eved. Omre sadeh gadola, omre sadeh katana. Or it's the bundles or the piles on a large field, or the bundles or piles of a small field. Whether that means the production of the field that's piled up on there, or the contents of a larger field, meaning that there are omarim. In both cases, you're dealing with materials or metaltalin. You're dealing with the ksut, you're dealing with the clothing of the evet, or you're dealing with produce that is on the field, not the evet itself, and not the field itself. Mar says, wait a minute, ksut, mashita'ano lo hodulo, mashahodulo lo ta'ano. Wait a minute. We're now back at square one, which is that when you talk about a large piece of clothing or a small piece of clothing, that is not something where it's a subset of the other item. That's not where, oh, big and then small is a subset of big. These are two separate bigadim. If that's the case, you're back to the problem that you started with, that a big evet and a small evet have nothing to do with each other. Rav says, k'da'amar Rav Papa, like Rav Papa says, b'dailfi, the bach has an alternate explanation, which is b'dailfi, which is the way that it's used in other places. Rashi over here says, sh'beged shalem haya, that it's a full beged, v'adayim mechubar, and it's still attached. Zomer ksut gola machartecha, v'zomer ksut ktana. Rashi is not clear here, but it seems like the two are attached to each other, or that there is a section that we can cut out of it. The easier way to explain it is the way the bach brings over here, that it's b'dailfi, which is a peruso, meshev kam kan, the kamar tono b'ksut bat chatichot harbei. That it is a piece of clothing that has sections to it that can be added or taken off. You can extend the jacket, you can extend the sleeves. There are these extensions that can be put on the beged. So therefore, you can make it into a big beged or a small beged by simply adding or subtracting those positions. Because then it is a subset. The smaller beged really is a subset of the larger beged. That's the easier way, or the easiest way to understand what is b'dailfi over here. But then the Gemara asks your question. Kashi the Rabbi Shaya, midi ksut ktani, evid ktani. Wait a minute. The Mishnah says evid, it doesn't say clothing. So that was your question. Where does ksut come up? Then the Mishnah doesn't mention ksut at all. It mentions evid. Evid means evid. Now, at least in Rav's answer, it says the may evid. So it is money, but it's at least related to the evid, because it's the value of an evid. Over here, ksut evid has zero to do with the evid. It all has to do with the clothing for the size of such an evid. But that seems to be an ancillary piece of information that the Mishnah didn't need to tell you. So the Ella, I'm Rav Hoshaya. Rav Hoshaya offers us a third possibility here. Gagon, shetano evid, biksuto. Now, that he was toying both the evid with his clothing. So he solves the problem that he had with Shmuel's position of saying ksut by saying, no, he's claiming a big evid with the bigger clothing, or a smaller evid with the smaller clothing. Sadeh be'omreha, the field with its piles or its bundles on it. Ve'akate, ksut, mashutano lo hodulo, mashodulo lo tano. Wait a minute. That is not the case here, because again, you're back to square one with the ksut, that they're not subsets of each other, and therefore, whatever he claimed, he did not admit to, and whatever he admitted, he didn't claim. Amar Rav Papa, so this is the origins of Rav Papa's statement. Before we said, just like Rav Papa said, here's the original statement of Rav Papa, b'dailfi or b'dailfi, which is these sectioned garments that can be expanded. So that's the way that Rav Hoshaya answers the question. We're talking about an evid and ksut. And therefore, the Ramban says over here that in all the cases of the Mishnah, you have really a situation of modeh b'miktzat. In the cases where he says eni yodea, in those situations, mitoch she'enu yochel yishava, since he can't take the shvuah that is incumbent upon him, yishalim, he has to pay. And therefore here he's going to have to pay the evid and the ksut, even though the evid really derives from a zokakin, from a gilgul shvuah. Now that causes problems for many of the rishonim who answered in the previous Mishnah as to why there was no Gilgul Shvuah over there, or why there was no issue of Shvuat HaShomrim generating another Shvuah. And they answered that is because if you answer any Yodea, that does not obligate you to pay when there's a Gilgul Shvuah. Obviously the Ramban disagrees with that and thinks that you have to pay over here. But those Rishonim that believe that when you respond to any Yodea to a Gilgul Shvuah, that does not obligate you, then why is the individual over here obligated? So one way to answer that is similar to what the Tosafot speculated about back on the previous Mishnah, is it depends how the Gilgul Shvuah comes about. If it comes from a Tanat Bari, then the Gilgal Shvuah carries weight. If it comes from a Tanat Shema, then it doesn't carry that type of weight. So over here, where there was a Tanat Bari, the Gilgul Shvuah will allow you then to say, Mitok She'en Yecholi Shava Yishalim. It says, Kashle Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet has trouble with Rav Hoshaya's position, because Zokukin Ato Le'ashmininan, you're coming to teach us the din of Zokukin, so you're asking, well, once you do that, why don't you go back to Eved? Because, Tanina, we have the Mishnah in Kiddushin, Zokukim HaNechasim She'en Le'm Achrayut, you can take non-real property where there is a Chiyuv Shvuah, and they can pull along to force you to take a shvuah on real property. So even though you're not allowed to take, you don't take a shvuah on property, you don't take a shvuah on an Eved Kanani or a Shifcha Kananit, nevertheless, if you're already compelled to take a shvuah for metaltalin, like clothing, then you can sweep up in that and have them take a shvuah on the Eved. So what Rabbi Oshaya is saying, our Mishnah is teaching us, is that the Eved Biksut tells you that you can draw a shvuah because of the clothing. You can draw a shvuah on the Eved. That's information that's an explicit Mishnah in Kiddushin. What do I need our Mishnah to teach us that? Okay, great. Moder b'miktzat of ksut can generate a shvuah that will also force a shvuah on the Eved. That's an explicit Mishnah in Kiddushin that we just quoted. So Ela Amar Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet now offers us a fourth alternative. Hamani Rabbi Meir Hi. The author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, or it follows the position of Rabbi Meir, Damar, Avdo, Kimitautulim Domi. That an Eved has a din of Mitautulim. That's not fully, because over here in the Mishnah, it's clear that the purchase took place through cash. And cash doesn't work by Mitautulim. So it has to be that he believes that they still have a din of Karko for acquisition. And therefore, Kesef works as the vehicle for acquisition. But then, if they are Mitautulim, it makes sense, so you can understand why they would take a shvuah over here. Bar says, Vakati, Mashatano, lo hodelo, Mashodelo, lo tano. But then it still is the claim and the admission, or the admission and the claim, have nothing to do with each other because you're dealing with an Eved Gadol and an Eved Katan. An Eved Katan is not a subset of an Eved Gadol. So, Savalaki Rabbi Gamliel, he holds like Rabbi Gamliel. We're pulling from everywhere in Shas right now. Here we go from Rabbi Gamliel in the Mishnah in Shavuot. Titznan, Tano Chitim v'Odes Orim. If he made a claim for Chitim, and then he admitted that he owes him Sorim, Patur, the Mishnah in Shavuot says that that's not considered to be Modeh B'Miksat. On the other hand, Rabbi Gamliel, Mechayev. Rabbi Gamliel says that is considered to be Modeh B'Miksat, even though the items are not identical, even though they're not a subset of each other, but just if the items are a smaller and larger size, smaller or larger value, that has a din of modeh b'miktzat. So Gemara says, very good. You dealt with the issue of modeh b'miktzat. But you didn't deal with helach, the fact that he could just throw the item back to him and say it's yours, and therefore there's no modeh b'miktzat. You did solve the problem of nishbaim al abadim, because you said it was Rabbi Meir, who says that you can't take a shvuah on abadim, or the other suggestions, the other three suggestions we had prior to that, that all indicated why there was a need for a shvuah over here. But what about the halach aspect of it? So Amarova, avdo de kotel yadei, v'sada shechafar ba borot shichim umi'arot. It's a case where there is some change in the status of the individual that doesn't allow him to do halach. For instance, it's a slave in which his hand was cut off, or a field in which he dug all these pits and these borot in it. So he can no longer say halach. He can't just say take it. He has a big field and a small field. The big field is intact. The small field, he's done changes or work on it, and therefore he can't just say to the party, take the small field, because he can't hand them over. The small field is no longer functional as a small field. The Eved Katan is not functional because he's missing a hand now. And that wasn't obviously the deal that they had between them, and he can't say Halach. And since he can't say Halach, that's what allows us to force a Shavuah over here, and not use halach to unwind or undo the problem of modem miksat, that you don't take a shvuah if there's halach. Right, so now that goes back to how the Gemara before answered, why is there a shvuah though right over here according to Sumchus? The answer is, I have a modem miksat case, and the modem miksat case is the following, which is we had four different answers as to what that is. Rav says it's monetary claims here for an eved and a sadeh. Shmuel says it's talking about the clothing or the bundles on the field. Rav Hoshaya says it is the Eved with the clothing. It is the field with the bundles. And then we have Rav Sheshit suggests that it is Rabbi Meir who is the author of the position being followed in the Mishnah, but it's Rabbi Meir together with Rabban Gamliel. And if you combine those opinions, you can come up with a Tana who would believe that you take a Shvat Modim Mikzat and a Vadim, and even though it's a Katan and a Gadol, you could come up with a case of Modim Mikzat that would generate a Shvat Doraita. And that's what the Gemara says, that Sumchus would agree when there's a Shvat Doraita that we don't say Yachloku, but rather take a Shvat, because here you have a case of Modim Bimikzat. Gemara says, Rabbi Meir, Ipchash Meinan Lei. Don't we have Rabbi Meir saying just the opposite? That you don't take a Shvuah on a Vadim. That's not a Mishnah and Baba Kama. Mishnah and Baba Kama. Gazalbe ma viskina. He stole an animal and it aged. Avadim viskinu. Slaves and they aged. Mishalem kishat gzela. He pays at the time of the gzela. Meaning that whatever their value was when he took it out of the possession of the owner, he becomes responsible for that value. Rabbi Meir Omer, Bavadim Omer lo, Harei Shocha, Lifanecha. By the Avadim, he can say, here's your stuff, take your slave back. Doesn't matter. Over here, you have an Eved who aged, an animal who aged. There's been a change in the item. And yet, Rabbi Meir says, Harei Shocha, Lifanecha. Because seemingly, Rabbi Meir thinks that the Avadim here are Kekarko. As opposed to that, if you deem them to be Metaltalim, then, like the Tanakama's position, you would assume that the shinui, the change in the item, the change in ownership, would generate an obligation to pay for the item at the time of the theft. And so it seems the Tanakama thinks Avadim kimetautalim, and Rabbi Meir thinks that Avadim are kikarka. And we have a principle, as Rashi notes from the Gemara Bava Kama, karka in an exelet. Land cannot be stolen. Since it can't be stolen, it remains in the possession of the original owner. Anything that happens to it happens under the auspices of the original owner. And so too here with the Avadim. They never left the possession of the original owner because they're deemed to be like Karka. Since they're like Karka, he can hand them back and say, Hari Shalcha Lefanecha, here's your item back. It was always yours. It's still yours. When they aged, they diminished in value. That happened under your auspices, under your ownership. But that means that Rabbi Meir is saying that Avadim Harihim Kekarka. So then, when it says, Halo Kasha, that Mishnah is not a problem. Kedemachlif Rabbi Bar Avua. Because Rabbi Avua flips the Mishnah over there as to the authorship. Betani, Rabbi Meir Omer Mishalem Keshad Agzela. Rabbi Meir says that you pay at the value at the time of the theft. V'chamim Omim Omer Lo Bavadim Areisho Chalifanech. And the Chamim say that you can say Helach. So now that's fine. Because now we're saying Rabbi Meir says you can't say Helach in those situations. And that would match with his positions over here. Elimimai Disavar Rabbi Meir. Makshinan karka liyevet. So now you have a next issue, which is, the Mishnah gives two cases over here. There's a case of an evet, and there's a case of a sadeh. How do you know that Rabbi Meir's opinion with regards to evet can be extrapolated to karka? By evet, he says that they have a din of metaltalim, you can take a shvua on them. Who says that means that by karka, he also believes that you take a shvua on karka? Ma evet nishbaim, af karka nishbaim. Just like by an Eved you take a Shvua, so too by Karka you take a Shvua. Duma Eved hu dinishbaim aval Karka lo. Maybe he has an opinion that says by Avadim you take a Shvua, by Karka you do not. You remember from the Gemara in Baba Kama and Peraka Merubeh, over there the Gemara discussed two mechanisms for limud. There is the klal uprat uchlal and riboy umiyo to riboy. Depending on which position you took, you would come out with a different answer. If you think that the klal uprat uchlal, then you exclude from Shvua all of these items. That's Karka, Shtar, and Eved. But then, if you learn Riboy, Miut to Riboy, then there's only one Miut over there. And the Gemara says that's Memayik Shtarot. That eliminates Shtarot. So from that Riboy and Miut to Riboy, Rabbi Meir's position derives that he thinks that an Eved, you would take a Shvua. The Gemara says now, how do you know that that also extends to Karka? The truth is, based on the Limud, it should extend to Karka, and therefore, even according to Rabbi Meir, it should naturally extend. Gemara says, Lo saka datcho, detanyo, because we have a braita. Amachlip para bechamor v'yalda, chena moecher shivkato v'yalda, ze omer bishuti v'ze shutek zocha. He gets it because of the bari claim. Therefore, the one who says that it happened in his possession, he gets it. Ze omer eni yodev, ze omer eni yodev, they both say, I don't know. Yachloku, they split it. Zeomer bishuti, zeomer bishuti. If they both make definitive claims, yishava mocher shibishuto yalda. Then he takes a shvua that it was born in his possession. The fee שכל הנשבעים שבתורה נשבעים ולא משלמים. Because the shvua devolves upon the seller, because in general, all shvuot min haTorah are shvuot that come along to exempt you from payment. So over here, the mocher is the one who's trying to release himself from an obligation. So since he wants to release himself from an obligation, he's the one that should take the shvua. Divrei Rabbi Meir, that is the position of Rabbi Meir. V'chumim omrim, ein nishbaim, lo al avadim, v'lo al karkot. The chumim say, no, you don't take a shvua in avadim, you don't take a shvua in karkot. Lav, michlal, the Rabbi Meir savar, nishbaim. From here it would imply that Rabbi Meir, who disagrees with the chachamim, thinks you take a shvua both on avadim and al karkot. Now first of all, this is supportive of Rav Sheshit's contention that Rabbi Meir is the author of our Mishnah, because here you find in the Braita, Rabbi Meir being the opinion that is saying that you take a shvua over here, and the chachamim disagree. The Braita is different than our Mishnah, because the Braita only brings the example of shivcha, does not bring the example of sadeh. So what the Gemara is saying is that the chachamim's response that you don't take a shvua on an eved and karka is coming to oppose the position of Rabbi Meir, who says you do take a shvua. Now Rabbi Meir and the Braita only said you take it on an eved. But from the Chachamim's response, we would assume that he would also say it by Sadeh. And therefore, we have now that position of Rabbi Meir is consistent that you don't take a Shvua both by Karka and by Evet. Mimai, how do you know that's the case? Dilma Kashem Ka'amrule. Maybe they're saying to him just like, Ge'echid Odit Lan Be'Karka Ot, just like you agree to us by Karka that there is no Shvua, Odit Lan Nami Ba'Avadim. Admit to us also by Avadim, or agree to us by Avadim, that there also is no Shvua over there. Teida, and I can prove to you the fact that Rabbi Meir does have such a position, that by Avadim he says there is a Shvua, by Karkaot he says there is no Shvua. Ditznan. Rabbi Meir Omer, Yesh Tvarim Shein Kekarka, Ve'enen Kekarka. There are certain items that are Karka, real property, vein and kikarka, but they don't have a classification, min adin, as karka, as real property. Vein chachamim modim lo, and the chachamim don't agree to him. Ketzad, what's the situation? Yud gifanim to unot, masarti lecha. I gave you 10 vines loaded with grapes. Ba'alomer, inam yalo chamesh. You only gave me 5 loaded vines. Rabbi Meir, mechayev. Rabbi Meir says you take a shvua over there, it's a modim and miksad case. Anything attached to the ground has a din like karka, and you don't take a shvua a la karka. Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, Rabbi Yossi, when it comes and qualifies the Mishnah and says, Anavim omdot libatzer ikabeinayu. Their machloket is where the grapes are ready to be picked. It's not simply, Rabbi Meir agrees when grapes are growing on the vine that they're mechuber the karka and you don't take a shvua on it. Their disagreement stems from grapes that are so ripe that they're ready to be picked. Do they then now have a status as karka or not? Since they are ripe enough to be picked, and they're no longer really deriving their sustenance from the ground because they're fully ripened, does that point make them kolo medi batzer ki batzur dami? That anything that's ready to be picked is as if picked already. The marsava ki batzur damian, Rabbi Meir believes it's as if they're picked, and therefore they're metaltali now and not karka. And the Chachamim believe that they still have a din of mechuber the karka, and therefore you don't take a shvua. What's clear from this Mishnah and Shvot, based on the qualification of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Chanina, is that Rabbi Meir believes in nishbayin ala karkot, that you don't take a shvua in karka, because it's only in that unique case where the grapes are so ripe that they are ready to be picked, that we say that you do take a shvua. But if it was stam karka, Rabbi Meir would agree, don't take a shvua. The Baal HaTosafot point out, even without Rabbi Yossi's qualification, we would still say, ein nishbayim al karkot, because he says, einan kikarka. Rabbi Meir makes a clear claim here that these vines don't have a din of karka. And since they don't have a din of karka, that means that he thinks the din of karka is no shvua. And the only reason you're taking a shvua here on the vines is because they're not like karka. And so Tosfot says, even without Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, you could have said that Rabbi Meir clearly holds ein nishbayim al karkot. But it turns out then that Rabbi Meir has an interesting position, which is hard to understand, and that's what the Baal Tosafot point out, which is that Rabbi Meir believes that karkaot ein nishbayim aleihem, avadim nishbayim aleihem. The problem is, how does he get there? If he learns by a klal uprat uchlal, he would think that none of those have a din in shvua. So he must be holding of riboy, miyot, or riboy. Now everyone agrees that shtar is the first thing that you took out with the miyot. But now he doesn't have another miut. How does he know that Avadim do have a Shvuah and Karka doesn't have a Shvuah? That means he must have another miut. And that's what the Baalei HaTosafot say, that Rabbi Meir must have another miut that we don't know about that allows him to exclude Karka as well. And to say both Karka and Shtarot are excluded from the world of Shvuah, but Avadim are included. Because he's Doresh Riboy Umiut Uriboy. But that does make an unusual position for Rabbi Meir. But given that position, we're no longer able to say that Rabbi Meir is the author of our Mishnah. Whereas he could be the author of the Braita, where it only spoke about Avadim. In our Mishnah, where it speaks about Avadim and Karkaot, that is not something that Rabbi Meir would agree to, because he thinks that Karkaot don't trigger a Shvuah, and therefore the explanation in our Mishnah of Rav Sheshet is no longer tenable. If that's the case, El Olam Kud Rabbi Hoshaya. We have to go back to Rabbi Hoshaya's position, which was the third way we explained the Mishnah. And what about the fact that Rav Sheshet raised this question with regards to Rabbi Hoshaya's position, that why do I need Zokakin? Because we have a Mishnah in Kiddushin that says that. Itzrich, Sakadat Chamina, because I would have thought, Ksut Eved Ke Eved Dami, that the clothing of the Eved becomes batel to the Eved and has a din like an Eved. Umrei Sadeh Ke Sadeh Dami, the piles or the bundles on the field have the same din as the field, and they're batel to the field, and therefore you would not say Zokakin. Kamash Malan, we do say Zokakin in this case. So there is a chiddush that is beyond that which is in the Mishnah and Kiddushin. It's not just the fact that you can take a shvuah metalkalin and then that forces you to also take it on the karka. But here, there would have been a havamina to suggest that there is no metalkalin over here, because the metalkalin are batel to the ikar item, the evid or the karka. The answer in the end is that's not the case, and you take a shvuah on the metalkalin, and that will draw along a shvuah on the karka or the evid as well. Zeomer eni yodea, v'zeomer eni yodea achloku. If they both say, we don't know, they split it. Hamani, who's the author of this position? Sumchazid amar mamona mutal b'safek chokim. So either the Tana is following the position of Sumchaz, or Sumchaz is the author of our Braita, that yachloku. Ema seifa, what are you going to do with the latter part of the Braita? Zeomer bishuti, ishava mocher, shebishuto yalda. Then the mocher takes a shvua. Ularaba baravuna damar in amar sumchos afilu bari yubari amayishava mocher yachloko mibai. Again, why here should he take a shvuah? If even in the case of bari yubari, sumchos says yachloko, why over here do we say that the mocher takes a shvuah? Where it says, modus sumchos, hechadika shvuah doraita, vikatali yada kirova, that he agrees in a case where there is a shvuah doraita, there's a case of modub and mixat that is generated, plus, Katali Yada, the hand was cut off of the Shifcha, so there's no longer an opportunity to say Heilach, and so for that reason, like Rava had suggested above, that's how we got rid of the problem of Heilach. So for that reason, there is a Shvuah Doraita over here of Modu B'Mitzat, and Sumchos agrees, where you have the opportunity to use a Shvuah Doraita, we prefer that solution over the solution of Yachloko. As Rashi notes over here, this is a Chiddush, and saying that the reasoning in the Braita, according to Sumchus, is because you have a Shvuah Doraita. And that Shvuah Doraita is a modu b'mikzat that is lacking in Halach. So Rashi explains over here that the Chiddush is that Shimcha Delav Halachu. Umimina Ta'anahu. It's still considered Umimina Ta'anah, the Shivcha V'ladachad Gufa, who? Ta'in Lei. Because when the claim is for the child that is born, not for the Shivcha. The answer is that since she was pregnant with the Ubar, Ubar Yerechimo is an extension of the mother, and they're seen as one entity. Since they're seen as one entity, there is a claim here for a Shifcha plus her baby, and the response is you're only entitled to the Shifcha. So that's still considered to be a mode of a mixat, because we look at the child and the Shifcha as a singular entity. Alright, now we'll start the next Mishnah. Hamucher Zeitav Le'itzim. A person who sells his olive trees for their wood, Vasupachot mirvi'it l'sa'a. And there are olives that grow on the tree, and when you press them, they make less than a revi'it, which is a volumetric measure, per sa'a. So the sa'a could be a measure either of the size of the area in which the zeitim are planted, or it could be a measurement of the historical production of the tree, that it produces a sa'a worth of zeitim, or that now, currently, these are bad quality olives to the point that even though they are a sa'a worth of olives, the production of oil is only a revi'it. Generally, when the Mishnah uses the term revi'it, it refers to revi'it alog, although there is a position of the Rabbeinu Chananel over here who says that the revi'it here is a revi'it akav rather than revi'it alog. And that would be four times as much revi'it akav than it is revi'it alog. So if you have a sa'ah worth of olives, and once you press them, they only give you liquid that's less than a revi'it alog, then hari elu shel bala zeitim. They belong to the buyer of the tree. So you have an individual who owns land. He sold the trees on the land for wood to the buyer. The buyer, before using the wood, we're going to see in a second in the Gemara, has that there are olives on the tree. So now he presses those olives for the olive oil, and he gets very little olive oil out of it. That's likely why the owner was selling the trees for wood, is because the olives were such bad quality or poor quality, or the production was so poor, he was selling them for wood. On the other hand, asar revi'it l'sa'ah, if it produces a revi'it alog for every sa'ah of zeitin, zeomer zeiti gadlo, the individual who owns the trees says, my tree grew the olives, zeomer atzi gadla, and the owner of the field says, no, it drew nutrition from my field, and my field was the contributing factor to the growth of these olives. Yachloku, they split the oil that is produced out of there. As the Rambam notes in the Perush Mishnayot, over here, the Yachloku here is not depending on Sumchus because of a Safek, but rather because they really are Shutafim in the growth of the Zeitim. And therefore, they're both entitled to 50% of the output because they both contributed in that manner. And we'll have to explain in the Gemara why he has a claim to the olives after he sold the trees. Shetaf Nahar Zeitav, if a flood came along and took his olive trees from his field, and it deposited them in his friend's field, and then the trees grew in his friend's fields, Zeomer Zeiti Gadol, the owner of the tree, which was uprooted with the flood and took it into his friend's field, says, my tree grew the olives. Zeomer Atzi Gadol. The other person says, where the tree is deposited, and that's where it's growing, that my land was the contributing factor to the olives, Yachloku, they will split it. So the latter half of the Mishnah we'll deal with in tomorrow's daf. The first half of the Mishnah we'll deal with right now. Hey Chidami, what is the scenario here? Here Amar Lei quotes the author. If he told him, cut the wood, cut the trees down immediately, afilu pachot mi revi'it nami the balakarka, then even less than a revi'it should belong to the balakarka, because he has no right to leave the trees around for the olives to grow. The only thing he has a right to do is cut the trees immediately. So there for sure it belongs to the owner of land. If he said to him, whenever you want, cut it down, then no matter how much the production is, it should belong to the owner of the tree, because he has a right to leave the trees there as long as he wants when he takes the wood. So what's the case here? He didn't indicate anything. He just said, I'm selling you the trees for the wood. He didn't tell him to do it immediately. He didn't tell him to do it whenever he wants. Pachod mirvit lo kapte inshe. If the trees, or the olives from the trees, produce less than a revi'it alog, people don't worry about that. That is something that people dismiss. It's de minimis in value, and therefore they're not worried, or they're not going to make claims for that, and therefore it belongs to the bala zeitim. Revi'it, kapte inche. On the other hand, if it's a larger amount, more than a revi'it alog, production per sa'ah of zeitim, then people are makpid on that, and they demand that they get their share of that item. So Amar Rav Shimon Pazi, Revi'it Shamru, Chutz Min Hotza'ah. He says that the Revi'it that is produced over here is excluding the cost. Meaning that you have to produce a Revi'it Alog of Shemin in value that exceeds the costs of production. Which as Rashi notes over here, Shemotzi Misikatan Ubatziratan. He has to pick the olives. He has to press the olives. That costs money. So just because it produced a revi'it alog from a sa'ah doesn't mean it's really worth the revi'it alog. It's worth the revi'it alog if that revi'it alog is in excess of the cost of producing it. So it has to produce more than a revi'it alog. It has to produce enough that it can cover the cost, plus have a revi'it alog in excess of that. And that's what Rav Shimon Pazi says, that the measurement of revi'it alog here is not just simply a revi'it alog from a sa'ah, but it's a revi'it alog in excess of profits above the cost of making the olive oil in this case. All right, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph.